Hello and welcome to volume 124 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue is brought to you by the generous support of Forrester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with forestry consultants who can provide an array of valuable services for landowners. And in today's issue, we'll discuss a forestry short course for non-foresters. We'll highlight a podcast for hunters. We'll discuss a program designed to provide conservation education tools for teachers, and we'll talk about hardwood lumber exports. I'm Hayes Brown, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Dana Lee Cole is Executive Director of the Hardwood Federation. It's a D.C.-based trade group that focuses on the interests of hardwood manufacturers. We wanted to talk with her because U.S. trade policy has been a hot topic for discussion, particularly as related to China. Welcome, Dana Lee.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Everyone has been much more aware of the role that international commerce plays in our lives. Are hardwood, U.S. hardwoods, actually part of this drama?
Yes, they are, unfortunately. Hardwoods have been a really important export commodity for U.S. mills and landowners for a number of years. In 2017, the value of those hardwoods exported worldwide was about $4 billion. And since 2009, China has been the largest foreign market for the U.S. hardwoods. Prior to the current trade dispute, about $2 billion worth of hardwoods were sent to China. And because there's no immediate market, domestic or international, to replace this Chinese market, the current dispute has had a tremendous impact in terms of those mills being able to ship that product. So it's had a big effect on a lot of the mills.
How have these recent tensions with China impacted the hardwood industry in particular, and also the landowners that supply the raw materials to the industry?
So in response to the U.S. putting tariffs on about $250 billion worth of Chinese goods, China imposed retaliatory tariffs on the products going into China from the U.S., including hardwoods. The tariffs were originally set to go into effect at 25% late last year, but there was a bit of a reprieve when they only went up to 10%. But I have to say, as soon as those tariffs were even mentioned, the mills started to see a real decline in demand. There were shipments left on the water. There were demands that the U.S. manufacturer and producer of the hardwood goods split the tariffs. So it really started to cut into their profit margin. And as, you know, everybody I'm sure knows, that profit margin was pretty narrow to begin with. So over the past three quarters where we've had this 10% tariff on most U.S. hardwoods going into China, there's been about an average of $154 million per quarter reduction in the value of the product, and that's about $500 million since the tariffs have been in effect. Now that they're up at 25%, that impact has been even more dramatic, and you're seeing a lot more orders canceled. You're seeing a lot more orders, kind of being held hostage once they hit the Chinese border, or there's demands to continue to reduce prices. So this is also impacting the landowners because they're the ones that sell to the hardwood industry. So they're also being impacted by these reductions in prices. And really, if the hardwood mills can't survive this, the hardwood landowners aren't going to have very many options about where to sell the wood that they are producing.
Where does the hardwood industry see, what do they see as the pathway to get this back in on a better footing for them?
Well, I think the only thing to do is to really get these negotiations back on track. The White House has pulled back, and they're not talking right now with China. So that's number one. Number two, long term, we need to probably do a better job of promoting internally in our domestic market, as well as our worldwide market. But that's really more of a long term strategy. We need to be more thoughtful about how we get these negotiations back on track to help us in the short term.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dana Lee. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Each year, the Alabama Forestry Association sponsors a teacher conservation workshop. It's designed to provide tools to teach conservation education in schools. Ashley Smith is the director of that program. Hello, Ashley.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Why is the conservation education currently lacking in our schools?
I'm not so sure that it's lacking so much, but that we want to try to make the connections between the Alabama conservation and Alabama forestry, that sometimes the teachers may or may not have the understanding or of our, all of our industry and our forests and our state. And so we want to try to make the connections for them and to help them better understand Alabama forestry so that they can better apply it and teach it in their classrooms.
Okay. Well, why does the Alabama Forestry Association use this tool of a teacher conservation workshop to provide this support for teachers? Why do they do it every year and support the cost of it?
Well, forests cover two-thirds of the state of Alabama, and that's approximately 23 million acres. So many of our landowners in our state are involved in a part of what is the forest industry. It's a leading industry in our state, and thousands of jobs in Alabama relate directly or indirectly to the forest. We know that forests provide numerous economic and environmental impacts to everyone, and so we want to make sure that we help our industry and help the forestry community in our state by providing this conservation education. A favorite quote of mine is one from a forester from Africa from years ago, and the quote is, "In the end, we conserve only what we love. We will love only what we understand, and we will understand only what we are taught." And so we want to help make it possible for the teachers to understand more about Alabama's forest and Alabama's sustainable natural resource that we have. And so that's why we spend such a large amount of time and effort into providing this program every year.
And what do the teachers benefit from attending the conference?
They get to hear presentations from professionals. They get they're a part of the forest community in Alabama. They receive lots of supplies and resources to take back to their classroom. They go and attend field trips. We visit forests. We visit mills, logging operations. And they are also trained in the International Education, Environmental Education Curriculum, Project Learning Tree. And that Project Learning Tree resource is correlated to all the state and federal standards. So it provides an easy overlay for teachers to take information back into their classroom and help them teach the standards that they're already required to teach. And so the Project Learning Tree environmental curriculum is a great way for us to incorporate forestry into their classroom. It teaches them that about conservation and about how to teach children not necessarily what to think, but how to think about our forests and our natural resources.
All right. Thanks, Ashley. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, much like Capital Ideas Live is a broadcast for forest landowners, Hunting Land is a podcast for landowners interested in hunting. We're pleased to welcome Joe Baia, who hosts the podcast. Welcome, Joe.
Hey. Thanks for having me on.
Why did you start this podcast called Hunting Land?
Well, you know, really where it comes from is past radio experience, and there's a lot of limitations with radio that we don't have with the podcast platform. And me being in media and having that background, but I'm also a land professional. I sell different types of land, large tracts of land. And my co-host on the show, Clint Flowers, he and his family have 40 years of experience, you know, with owning timberlands and various types of large tracts of land. And so we kind of came together and said, look, we need to start answering the questions that people are asking us in the field, but we need to be able to take that into the 21st century and not only answer these questions when people are asking us, but be able to answer those questions when people want to know the answers to them. So the big part of that is being available when people are using Google to search for things. And so if a guy's got a question at 10 o'clock at night about, you know, he's trying to figure out is it the right move for him to put a conservation easement on his property, or maybe he's asking that question, you know, man, I'd like to build a duck hole, and he's thinking about doing more duck hunting. We want him to be able to find that information, and we bring on the experts in that field onto the Hunting Land podcast to get that information out there, but also keep it there. Radio is a you know, it's there and then it's gone. So podcasts allow us to keep that information online at all times.
Okay. How do you find content to cover on the program?
Well, it's a mix of things. So we do a lot of stuff based on what we see in the field. Clint having so much experience and me being relatively new in the industry, you know, something like a conservation easement is a good example. I get a question from a landowner and he says, you know, I'm thinking about doing a conservation easement. I want to buy some land. I want to know if that makes sense or not. So, you know, I can go back to Clint and say, Clint, you know, I don't really know how to answer this question. Have you dealt with this? And so he has, you know, in his experience, and so we are able to, you know, put a dollar value on that conservation easement and bring that back to that landowner or that person interested in buying land. So, you know, that's one method, one way that we find ideas is just from what we experience in the field. But another big part of it is what kind of questions people are asking Google. You know, what are people searching for? What do they want to know? And especially if we have questions ourselves and we can't find that answer online, that's a great spot for us to fill that gap.
Okay. All right. Well, Joe, thank you very much. We appreciate that and look forward to hearing some more about your podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Chris Irwin is a faculty member of the University of Georgia School of Forestry and Natural Resources, and we wanted to find out more about his class that he teaches called Forestry for Non-Foresters. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Chris, what knowledge and skills do the participants gain by attending the course?
Well, there's a lot of information we provide over the three-day course, but in a nutshell, it's the history of forestry from a national perspective down to a southern, southeastern region perspective, even down into maybe some of the state-level issues that we're dealing with. Another thing they learn is how to measure trees, the basic concepts of using a clinometer and a diameter tape for volume. They do a short mock inventory to understand what a forester is doing in a daily routine of doing an inventory. So they come back quite astounded. It's like, I don't think I want to do that all day. And they learn compass and pacing skills, what is silviculture, some basic tree ID skills. They're updating them on forest health issues related to pine beetle outbreaks, emerald ash borer issues, hemlock woolly adelgid. You know, what are the forest health concerns of the day? And also we visit the wood technology lab here at the Warnell School, and they see and get to break boards and understand how wood is tested, and so a lot of things.
How popular is it?
Very popular, actually. I've been teaching this course since 2004, and I think the popularity is gained through word of mouth within industry. We get a lot of folks that are in the not land management side of things or natural resource management, but rather the office side. So get a lot of accounting professionals that don't have a forestry background. We get folks from real estate. And I think that is because we provide participants with this ground up knowledge that it makes it easy to digest for them. And, you don't have to know anything about forestry to come to this course. And the instructors are really cool.
You and Bill Hubbard are leaders in that area. Now, tell me, it's a three-day course, I believe, and there's going to be one in October next.
That's right, October 22nd.
Real quickly, how is the course structured?
And the course is structured very simply. Participants are provided an environment of learning that's comfortable and informal. We are located at the Flinchams Phoenix, which is at the Warnell School's Demonstration Research Forest here in Athens. We make learning fun. We mix classroom learning and hands-on field experiences and try to give the participants a fun learning experience and also make them feel comfortable and try to take care of them so that they want to come back.
Okay. The next one is begins on October 22nd. There's a link for registration that will be open on July 22nd. And so go to that link and make sure you're notified when the registration begins. Thank
That's
you,
correct.
Chris. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And that's all the time we have for this issue. We appreciate the contributions of Dana Lee Cole, Ashley Smith, Joe Baia, and Chris Irwin. We normally think of lumber as being used in buildings and products in the U.S., but as it turns out, we have something valuable that consumers in other countries want as well. This places forest landowners in a global competition for their products, but also places us in a larger drama concerning the trade imbalances with other countries. This trade imbalance is being addressed right now, but in the meantime, hang on for a wild ride. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.